The thing about this is, you know, there's not a place in the world that hasn't been impacted by the presence of humans anymore. So we explicitly focused on built open spaces in urban environments. These are my co-authors who couldn't make it today, so thus it's me. And if I get a little loopy in the next 20 minutes, it's because this is my fifth presentation at a third conference in 5 days. So you have to excuse me a little bit. Thank you. Everything I'm going to talk to you about was, in fact, fully funded through a competitive grant process by the TKF Foundation. And if you're interested in open spaces in urban areas, I actually encourage you to visit their website. They do some interesting work. The grant for us at Canyon Ranch Institute was part of the process to help us prepare to consider how to actually construct and build and evaluate such a space. So what we did was a very comprehensive literature review, and the results of that are what I'm going to talk with you about briefly today. Just as a sort of background for a little bit, Canyon Ranch Institute is a 501c3 nonprofit public charity located in Tucson, Arizona, but we do work all around the world eliminate, actually. We're not interested in reducing. We work to eliminate health inequities. Everywhere. So we do it through a lot of tools. This is one of them. Other things we focus on are prevention of chronic disease, health literacy, and we take a very integrative approach to health, mind, body, spirit, and in this case, place. So we asked really two questions of not ourselves, but of probably some of your work. In terms of, you know, what's going on around the design, development, and researching the effects of open spaces on human health in urban areas. So one was, right, a central question, what are people building? And why are they doing that? What are they really planning and putting into these spaces, be it in a hospital, a public park, a neighborhood, pocket park, across all types? What are they thinking is important? Why do they think it's important? That was question one, even though I just embedded like three questions into it. It was still one question. And the second one is, after they built it, how did they do research to see what effects on human health, in particular, the space actually had? And foreshadowing my conclusion, I will tell you that as a research field, this area is in its infancy still. Which we found quite surprising considering, you know, the long-standing interest in environment among researchers. This particular area needs a lot of development. So how did we find all the articles that we found? Because you have to tell people that before you get to the fun part. We did it in two phases. One was really a very traditional approach, phase one, to a literature review, right? We looked through all those 14 different online databases. We used a quite wide range of keyword search terms to try to find everything that was possible out there. This approach, we initially found 173 articles. When we screened them for relevance to the two main research questions that we had, we knocked that down to 60. And then we paused and said, 60 articles? Really? That's it? That can't be right. So we went back and did another search. And this was a much more sort of grounded approach to searching. We've opened up our search terms quite a bit, as you can see there. Spiritual gardens, labyrinths, urban spaces was almost always an and urban. Healing gardens, contemplative, I can say that this morning, maybe a little bit, maybe not. Gardens. You can see sort of the different direction that this took. So that was a very broad search. It produced, you know, thousands of articles. And then what we did was narrow that down by looking at particular areas of effects that we thought would be relevant to our area of interest and use the psychological behavioral with a wild card, behavior with a wild card, and physical health. So that, after narrowing it down with those three areas of possible effects, produced almost 2,000 articles. And then in our eagerness, we decided that was fine. We'll just sort of wade through those and figure out which ones actually can answer the questions that we posed. And that knocked us down to a total, combining both phase one and phase two of the search, to 113 articles, which seemed like it was a fairly sufficient body of evidence to sort of base our inquiry on so that when we moved forward in our own work to design and build such a space, we could actually say it was evidence-based. unless we found the evidence was ridiculous and we didn't like it, and then we'd say, forget it. But we did. So what did we find? In terms of the design, you know, when people talked about what they put into these spaces, we sort of looked at the themes that emerged and then the characteristics of the built space and the research methods and the outcomes that they measured. And I'll talk about each of those in turn here briefly. So probably the dominant theme in the design of such spaces was a very explicit attempt to make it compatible with and encourage human activities. Very, very rarely did you get a sense of them building this space to be just nature for nature's sake. It was very directed at utility and sort of encouraging people to, you know, get up and move and investigate and explore the space. To do that, they were very sensitive to the potential users of the space to try to make it culturally appropriate, age appropriate, gender, and mental health arose quite frequently as one of the considerations that people put into these spaces, and just healing, sometimes from very specific diseases, especially in the sense of people building healing spaces, for example, in cancer hospitals. You find quite a bit of activity in that specific area. There was a lot of discussion about the different types of use that these spaces could encourage. Sometimes it was very active use, walking, right, exploring. Sometimes it was very passive, sitting, watching, reflecting on yourself, and just trying to build a natural space that would produce those sorts of outcomes, activities in humans, actually. More themes, right, was to try to build a space that would allow people to continue their healing process from whatever health, be it mental or physical health issue that they arrived at that space with. And you really saw a lot of very deliberate thinking and design attempts to make the space a metaphor for healing, and that's where gardening really came in. Sometimes active gardening, sometimes passive, that it was a garden space, right? Because why? What is that? That's a place where things grow. But there's also the metaphor about life and death that occurs in every garden that people really specifically built into these spaces, especially on a seasonal basis. They really did consciously at times reflect that overall process by the design and choice of plants, etc. The other thing people were very conscious of was trying to really stimulate the human senses, sight, sound, touch, feel, and create a sense of space, fascination, and to get people to return because of that stimulation. Two other themes on this slide that we found, right, was to encourage people to actually sort of stop. I want to say stop, drop, and roll just as a joke, but that's not really true. They wanted people to stop and listen to themselves. Right, and be aware of that singular moment in time and place that they were in, because, in fact, there is evidence that if you are mindful of your own health and healing process, it will be better. Your outcomes will be better. And the other one that we, once we read it, we're like, yeah, duh, right, was make sure it's safe. Make sure that there's not going to be an element in the built space that's conducive to criminal activity. You think, yep, you have to check that box to be sure, or otherwise people are not going to use the space, they're not going to return. This theme relates in some ways to this notion of metaphor of healing and the garden space, right, the life process. And it's this conscious design so that people enter the space sometimes through a really deliberate portal, and then they have a sense of the overall sort of elements, but you transition into really specific places. This could be in, like, you know, they'll build an alcove or use plants to create breaks within the space so that people transition from one space to another very deliberately, thinking about how people are going to walk through the space, creating places to sit and contemplate and be reflective. And sometimes this was done with light, with plants. There were a lot of methods that people actually used, but it was a very common design characteristic that we encountered. And an awareness of culture ran through a number of the built spaces that we read about in this literature review. And this went from, you know, a strong awareness of immigrants and their historical space in some communities, trying to build a place that reflected the point of origin more than the actual place where people were living right now, and to build in the culture of the community into the space, in an effort to also, right, encourage participatory engagement with the landscape, the open space in the urban environment that we read about. Other sort of moving into slightly more technical issues, right? Water was a very common thing that people built into the space. The use of public art was a common theme that emerged, and being very aware of seating. I'm reminded of some classical studies where people would build seating into open spaces and then watch it over time and realize that people would move the seats to where they wanted them versus where the architects designed them. So this was a very still a common theme, even more technical. Right, people who dug deeper into this did a very thorough site analysis, not just of the site itself, but of the surrounding community, to really learn better how this would integrate with the overall quality, make it accessible, especially under ADA rules, and a very particular focus on plants, right? Because some plants might be beautiful, but might be toxic. And you know, two-year-olds, as we were talking, you know what a two-year-old will do. So it's another real concern that you need to think about as you design these spaces. In terms of how people research the effects, this is probably the area that needs the most development, I will say. In quantity, this is the types of tools and areas that people research, right? The aesthetics of the space and the surrounding community, the emotional response to the place, the social relationships that emerge because of the built space, self-reported health status because of visiting the built space, you know, a direct probe, how does this space affect your health, was used 12 times. And remember, this is out of 113 articles, so there really weren't a lot of outcomes. Some studies use more than one of these. Did it prompt you to exercise, to move your body? What was your motivation to visit the space? Only four studies used what people would call an objective health marker as a result of visiting the space. How often you went, and actually two studies looked at whether being in the space changed your nutrition, dietary habits. In particular, within those sort of broad realms, and I'm certainly not going to talk about each of these because I forgot to tell you, the most important thing is that this is going to appear in the very next issue of Human Ecology Review as a journal article, so if you're really interested, you can just go read that, which, by the way, will be the last paper-based issue of Human Ecology Review, which is going all online, which makes sense because it's human ecology, right? So in terms of the community, right, how far people lived from the space, how far from their home, the environmental quality, the density of the neighborhood, all of these were indicators that people looked at from a change perspective. Does building this space change that or affect the use of the space for users? In terms of emotional response, you know, there's just a number of scales that exist in social science research that people used. Stress, fear of crime, empowerment, emotional distress were some of the key indicators that people looked at. In terms of the community, you can see the interest areas here, right? Did it build community trust? Did it have an effect on crime or volunteering? Did people feel they had control, safety? Knowledge of the community, social interactions and support, these were all areas that people evaluated in relation to the use of these open spaces. Self-reported health wasn't just, you know, the classic, how healthy do you feel this week, year, day, whatever time frame they want to put it in. You know, they also went into depression, fatigue, level of pain, especially in a hospital environment. Did it have any effect on the pain that you experienced? Spiritual well-being, quality of life, and stress. Only two of the four studies that used in quote-unquote objective health measure, this is it, right? BMI. And cortisol levels, which actually might be the most interesting of the pair. Cortisol, ultimately, even though the evidence isn't that strong, can be linked to chronic disease because it's a marker for inflammation. It's also quite easy to take through saliva and relatively cost-effective. So if you're working in this area, this is one of the objective health indicators you might consider adding to your study if you haven't already. Methodology-wise, People said survey, so we counted survey. People said in-person or telephone interview, so we counted it that way. Clearly, there could be some overlap between those, but we had to go with what people said because, as usual, unfortunately, they didn't go into that much detail about how they really collected some of this data. And then it went down to workshops, environmental analysis, a reanalysis of GIS data. Only two studies use focus group. I found that surprising myself. Neighborhood mapping, and then up to the more standard research methodologies. When did they collect data? We're fine. Pre, post, and post-post was the most common. The longest time frame we found was 3 years, which was phenomenal, but that was only one study. Most often it was a matter of months or weeks versus years. One study did it seasonally, which was very interesting. When you think about it, well, where I live in Tucson, Arizona, there's only two seasons, hot and not so hot. But in other places, you can see how that would have a real effect on the use of an open space. And sometimes it took, as I said, a few months to get all the interviews done. So basically what I think we collectively, if you call this a field, an area of research, need to think about is can we actually move this from sort of a qualitative first-level inquiry to a more defined sort of relationship. If we build this specific attribute into an open space, can we create a specific hypothesis about that attribute and then actually test it over time? Fundamentally, no one has done that in the 113 articles that we saw, at least. If anybody has, I'd love to hear about it. Yes, there are a lot of variables that you'd have to figure out how to take into account in a design like this, but it's a nice direction overall that I think the field in general can move to. And with that, I leave you 3 or 4 minutes. Thank you.